Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're going to talk about hemp, the plant hemp, and whether it is possibly making a comeback here in Iowa. Up until recently, it's been illegal to grow hemp in the U.S. without a permit. Since 1970, that was when the Controlled Substances Act was passed and banned that growth. But now, at least 35 states nationwide are allowing some form of industrial hemp cultivation, overseen by the state's boards or regulatory organizations. And here in Iowa, in fact, the last legislative session, we had a lot going on, so it was easy to miss this. A research and exploration bill for hemp passed the Iowa Senate unanimously. It didn't get any further in the legislative session, but some are saying the prospects for future passage appear optimistic. We want to talk about hemp, its nature, and of course, talk about its sibling or its cousin, whatever you want to say, marijuana in the same cannabis family, how they are different. And we want to have a variety of views, and we welcome your questions and comments. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Joining us, first of all, Ethan Voorhees is a farmer from the Nashua, Iowa area, southeast of Charles City in North Iowa. Ethan, welcome to our program. Ethan, do you hear me? Okay, just a minute. My mistake. Ethan, I bet you hear me now.
I can hear you now.
Okay, very good. Ethan, you have a family farm up there near Nashua?
Cattle and pigs, and then we do some row crop.
Okay, very good. And so tell me, I understand you're excited about the prospects for hemp in the state. What has you excited?
Well, it's the consumers. You know, they want everything that's cannabis. And so what we believe is that we can connect with the consumer and deliver our high-end Wagyu beef product in a regenerative way and tell that story that captures what we're doing with the soil and improvements. And then we can translate that to the things that people have wanted to see, which is water quality and improved soil health.
Okay, let's take those one at a time. You named a number of things. You raise a special type of beef known as, did you say, Wahoo? This is Kobe beef, right?
Yeah, it's Kobe beef, but the breed name is Wagyu.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it's the Japanese word for our cow. But those genetics, you know, we got like 40 cows and a handful of bulls out of Japan before they declared it a national treasure and banned export. You know, and so that's what we raise on our farm, and we sell beef. And so we believe that we can make the beef healthier by improving our soils through a healthier crop rotation using industrial hemp.
Okay, so in the beef production, the beef, your cattle are eating hemp seed?
So, yeah, we're working on getting FDA approval for the grain in our cattle feeds. And so in our operation, we would crush the seed and use the oil to supplement the steers and then use the proteins that are left over from the seed to make pellets and protein tubs, you know, blend it with our corn silage in the fall to feed the rest of our operation.
Mm-hmm. And how does that affect the beef?
Well, we expect to see improved growth rates in the young cattle because of the high-quality protein. But we'll see, you know, up to 500% more CLA in the beef itself postmortem.
What's that?
CLA, conjugated linoleic acid,
mm-hmm.
Which is a powerful anti-carcinogen.
Mm-hmm.
And so
it's healthy. It's healthier beef then.
Yeah, it'll become healthier beef coming out of a healthier rotation. You know, and we want to farm it in a way with other young farmers so that we have a social impact as well.
Okay, so it's apparently good for the beef. Talk more about the soil and the water quality, because you would be rotating this in. How does that make a difference?
Well, so as we kind of reintegrate the livestock, you know, we really want to have a lot of perennials, and that's where a lot of our impact is going to come from. But to supplement those perennials and to make them more utilizable, we need the proteins. And so we need corn to help maximize the desaturization of the carcass. So hemp kind of fills that gap of giving us the oils to supplement our grain to make it healthier beef. But then, it's that rotational crop with that corn so that we're able to have a healthy crop rotation. And using an improved crop canopy compared to the soybean, we're able to get in using precision agriculture and row crop it to the point where we're able to control the weeds and minimize the tillage and the spray. So that way we're able to build the healthy soils, and then sequester more carbon and have more water holding capacity.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a cycle. And you got to start somewhere. And I think replacing soybeans for hemp in our rotation is essentially what we need to do.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, being a farmer in Iowa, what's standing in the way of you expanding or really getting into hemp production in a big way?
We've just been looking for the legal avenue. We need fair access to capital and insurance and all these other things. No farmer is willing to, take a $10 or a $50 million operation and risk it all for a little bit of extra profit. And so if we were to have a legal way to do it here in Iowa, I would already be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked for the last couple of years to make it somewhere else, And so we've still kind of had the hang up with the FDA, even if we were to grow a crop and want to feed it to our cattle, the FDA, the federal government at any time could step in and make us condemn all those animals because it'd be considered an adulterated feed product. And so that's where we've kind of been on the front lines in Colorado, working with their legislator through their hemp feed study group and the coalition that came out of that study group and to putting a food additive petition in front of the FDA to make it legal for cattle and dogs, and then whatever else we can obtain the financing for. I mean, we're trying to raise money to make it legal, nationwide.
Mm-hmm. So would you characterize your feeling as optimistic for the future?
Absolutely. I believe when you see the Senate Majority Leader and the Minority Leader come together on an issue, I think that you can clearly see that it's bipartisan. And so there's a lot of steam on the federal level in Washington, D.C. For reform this year. And so I believe that the Hemp Farming Act is part of the Farm Bill now. And, it'll be a couple of months, and hopefully we'll see a vote and see some, big changes coming out of D.C.
Mm-hmm. So you talked about a number of uses, applications for hemp and hemp seed that I think most of us have not heard about, feeding cattle hemp seed, for instance, and some of the soil ideas that are really advantageous here. But what are some things off the farm or some other applications that we might be better familiar with? There's hemp clothing out there now, right?
Yeah, correct. Clothing is absolutely one of the big potential markets. There's a lot of chemicals and impact to our clothing options. And hemp is that good alternative. And I believe that kind of all of these companies that have a good impact will be well rewarded by the consumer. So part of the way we see it is, we're utilizing that grain and the oils and stuff, but then we still have the fiber and the herd or the kind of the biomass of it, which, are used as plastics and hempcrete homes. There's just a tremendous range of products, and that's what really kind of brings me back to the point of hemp being a better crop is that you have the other co-products, not just the grain of it.
Mm-hmm. What does hemp do better than any of the pre-existing? We make plastics out of other things, oil and so forth. We make a lot of our clothing out of cotton and polyester. Does hemp excel more than the other materials we presently use in any of these cases?
Yeah, I believe that it there's not much it doesn't do better. It's a better protein. It's a better balance of oils. It's a stronger fiber, resistant to rotting. And so then I think of like the hempcrete, you know, it's flame retardant, you know, it's pest retardant, mildew and mold resistant, you know, and so it makes great homes.
You can build a home out of hemp.
Yes, correct. So, you know, they're making fiber insulation. They're making the hempcrete, which resembles concrete or like an adobe home, and it acts as insulation. So it's a superior building material. I mean, there's 25,000 uses, you know, and so when we reintegrate this to our agriculture today, you know, we're going to see a windfall of investment coming from all different ranges, people wanting to develop this product, you know, and what makes hemp unique is the way it grows, you know, it grows fast and you get a lot of biomass and you have a lot of product, you know, and so you do that in a green way, though,
mm-hmm.
you know, so it, if you do it right, it can be carbon negative.
Ethan Voorhees is with us, a farmer from the Nashua, Iowa area, obviously someone who's very hip on hemp, so to speak, looking forward to laws changing to permit the growth of industrial hemp in our area as well. If you'd like to join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Joining me and Ethan, Brian Kuhn is with us. He's with the... Let me get this here. The Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection Plant Industry Bureau Director at the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture. Brian, welcome to our program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Good to have you on. You've been listening to Ethan there and his hopes for the future up there in Wisconsin. I understand you have a pilot program, so there are farmers up there licensed to grow hemp at this time?
Correct. Yeah, this year we've got about 183 licensed and registered. So those are folks that are planning to put seed in the ground or have put seed in the ground this year in 2018. So our legislation passed at the end of last year and was signed into law, and we quickly had to move forward with a pilot program for this growing season.
Mm-hmm. So your state legislation passed. It took advantage of a change in the 2014 Federal Farm Bill?
Correct, right. The Federal Farm Bill provided those provisions to states that basically said if you have have hemp legislation on the books in your state, you can take advantage of that 2014 Farm Bill provision that basically creates kind of an exemption within the Controlled Substances Act for these pilot programs for industrial hemp.
Mm-hmm. And what are there specific goals of this pilot program? What would they be?
Yeah, the goals for us, you know, in Wisconsin and I think nationally are one, to get hemp back on the landscape and get it back out there as ultimately likely a crop for, you know, as Ethan was describing, you know, moving it into rotation with other crops. And, you know, many states grew hemp many years ago. Like you had mentioned earlier, the Controlled Substances Act and its precursors to that kind of put an end to that because of the concern and the connection with marijuana. But there are, you know, many uses for the product. There's demand from the public right now. And I think all things are kind of coming together to, you know, to help these markets, and the Farm Bill provisions are the first thing that really, again, gave states a legal avenue to get to getting hemp back on the landscape and back into farming.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's limited, like I say, to this pilot research program. So the growers are having to collect documentation data as they're growing their hemp and giving us feedback here at the Department of Ag, so we can publish a report at the end of the year based on the grower input and the data that they're collecting for us. But it is the avenue, and it's being done under, you know, a very controlled kind of climate with licensing and registration and with direct state regulatory oversight. So it's not like any other crop at this point. My belief and hope is that at some point it will grow into just another crop. But at this point, it's certainly it's a unique crop with a whole regulatory program that comes along with it for growers, and that's something for growers to be aware of. It's not putting corn and soybeans in the ground.
Right. When you say, Brian, it's not just another crop, you're talking about the baggage it has because it's part of the cannabis family.
Correct, and with the Farm Bill, it requires testing of basically every crop to prove that it is industrial hemp and not something else. So industrial hemp by the Farm Bill is defined as less than 0.2% tetrahydrocannabinol, which is the psychoactive component of marijuana or of cannabis. So this has got no effective psychoactive component, and we just have to document that it meets that threshold. And that requires the state at this point to basically go out and sample every hemp field being produced in the state.
Can you look at a hemp plant next to a marijuana plant and tell the difference?
You know, there are people, I hear both sides of that in general from a regulatory standpoint and probably from a law enforcement standpoint. Most would say, you know, no, you can't. You grow them very differently in a field setting. Hemp's grown in very, you know, close quarters, and marijuana's grown in a different way with more space between plants and that kind of thing. But, yeah, so visually, looking at a leaf on a table, I would say no, you can't tell that difference, and therefore we do analytical testing to document that THC level.
Mm-hmm. When you look at how this may move forward, is moving forward, and in fact, with the pilot program in Wisconsin, of course, this is all mixed up in politics and our cultural understanding of hemp and marijuana. Are there a lot of misunderstandings there when you launch into a discussion or when you hear a discussion about hemp?
Yeah, I think, that there are definitely folks that just say cannabis, marijuana, and that's that.
Same thing.
Yeah, so that's kind of the struggle point is moving beyond that to say, and I think the stepping stone is this pilot program, which, again, comes with a fairly heavy regulatory oversight and direct involvement. And, you know, this one passed our legislature unanimously, both sides, which in the past it's historically been negatively impacted by law enforcement concerns about hemp and marijuana. And in this case, I think because of the regulatory nature of the program and background checks and that kind of stuff that are required to become a licensed hemp grower, law enforcement had more comfort than they had in past legislative sessions.
Wow, it's so easy to see how this might be abused if hemp is grown industrial. Also, in your state, for instance, you could have, you know, a field, part of it be hemp, part of it be marijuana, and if the appearance, the outward appearance, is not that much different or almost indistinguishable, you could sort of cloak hemp growth. You could put some marijuana in there, right?
Yeah, I think historically that's exactly been the concern. I think from a pollination and plant genetics standpoint, that those are unlikely because anybody growing marijuana isn't going to want a hemp field anywhere near them for the concern of diluting down their THC level. Mm-hmm. And anybody growing a legitimate hemp crop, again, if they kick above that 0.2% THC, their crop is considered illegal and has to be destroyed. So that's, those two things, in my opinion, make it fairly unlikely that we're going to see that. But that, again, you're right, that's definitely been a historic concern.
Mm-hmm. Ethan, jump in here again and tell us about how much you see here is sort of an unfair, perhaps misunderstandings about hemp when you're involved in the circles you are about getting more hemp grown.
Yeah. No, I think that you guys are exactly right. I mean, that's historically been everybody's fear, is that somebody's going to have some marijuana out in these hemp fields. And you guys are exactly right. I mean, the pollen destroys the marijuana plant, so to speak. And so for us, I mean, we're looking at it truly as an agricultural commodity, and so we're looking to be the leaders in carbon sequestration. You know, we want to a closed-loop biodynamic system where we can sequester more carbon per acre and raise high-quality food at the same time, And I think when people see that we're able to do better in side-by-side comparisons to the traditional monoculture ag that we have today, that we'll gain that acceptance. But we've got to break down these, stigmas that, prohibition has gave everybody, hemp and marijuana are both non-toxic. There's no amount your kid could eat or swallow or smoke, that's going to kill them. You know, it's just there's no reason why somebody would abuse hemp. Marijuana, yeah, there is some concern. I would say that there's more concern with tobacco and cigarettes, you know. But, you know, we just got to get through, I don't know, this stigma that's mm-hmm. attached to it and let people see that it's a real ag commodity and that when used properly, it's a heck of a good answer to building soil health and subsequently water quality.
Brian Kuhn, take us back to 1970. I don't know how much historical knowledge you have on this, but if they are such different plants, and hemp will not make you high, no matter how much you eat or smoke or whatever with it, how did they get confused? How did they get thrown in the same bucket here?
Yeah, and I don't have a good deal of knowledge on this, other than basically they took what existed back in, it may go back as far as the 40s, and they basically just copied it right into the Controlled Substances Act in the 70s, and really from the statements I've heard on it, really didn't change much of anything. So it just, when that switch took place, it really kind of put ratcheted things down much tighter and pretty much put hemp out of reach for any ongoing use. Now, I think hemp also, you know, maybe the heyday was back during World War II in the 40s and into the, you know, leading into the 50s. But with the, you know, a lot of hemp went into war materials for uniforms, for parachutes, for rope, for many, many different things in the war effort, which really caused a significant pull and demand for hemp back in that time frame. But as that tailed off and the needs from coming out of World War II tailed off, generally hemp production followed suit in a pretty steep decline. So it was kind of a storm of both kind of market economics and, you know, and other technologies were coming along. Right now, you're not making the same products that you made in the 1940s out of hemp. It's the new technologies, potentially. I mean, as Ethan mentioned, I think there are good environmental value in soil health and water quality. But there are new technologies and new products that you'd make today that weren't around back then.
Okay. Brian Kuhn is with us. Ethan, I don't know if you can stick around for the second half hour.
Yeah.
Okay. Ethan Voorhees with us, a farmer from the Nashua, Iowa area, who is a big booster of getting more industrial hemp grown in this country, specifically in Iowa. Brian Kuhn is with us from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture. We're talking about industrial hemp, and perhaps it's making a comeback here in Iowa. I'm Ben Kiefer, back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
We're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Did you know America's first president, George Washington, pushed for hemp growth, and he grew the crop himself? Also, tens of thousands of acres of Iowa farmland were used to grow hemp. That was during the Second World War, to make uniforms, canvas, parachutes, and other things. Hemp has a history in the country and here in Iowa. We're exploring perhaps a comeback for hemp in Iowa and the rest of the country. Ethan Voorhees is with us. He's a farmer from Nashua, Iowa. He's a big advocate for changing the laws concerning industrial hemp. Brian Kuhn with us of Wisconsin, where he's with the Department of Agriculture, sharing some of the insights about the history, the applications, the legality, and the future of hemp. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, and our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Let's go to our phones. Dennis is with us in Polk City. Hi, Dennis.
Hi. I would just like to say that in the winter, I travel sometimes to the care state of Hawaii, and I volunteer once a week to go out and pick pick up garbage on the beaches. And I'd like to point out that almost 99.9% of the garbage that's in the ocean is plastic derived from petrochemicals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of curious if how many of those products we could make out of hemp, and maybe we would have this serious problem that's only getting larger, because in the North Pacific now, there is a island of plastic almost the size of Mexico floating around.
Right, Dennis. So I hear you there. I've been reading about that, too, and a lot of sea life is suffering, swallowing the plastic that we put into our oceans. Brian, do you happen to know anything about this? Would a hemp-based plastic be more likely to degrade better than petroleum-based plastic?
Yeah, I don't have specific, data or information to share on that, other than to say it is one of those new technology areas. So we know there are plastic, companies that are working in plastics today that are interested in hemp, whether that's to make a stronger plastic or to make a whole new product. But that's the kind of thing that I'm talking about with hemp today versus World War II. I think the real value is in the new technologies and new potential that it has to do something just like the caller's describing, to create an alternative or new product that could be a greener product.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, hemp can be, it's a hugely versatile product, we know. And so, I think that potential is there for something like that. But I again, can't speak to the specific details.
Right. When we talk about the various applications, Brian, Ethan mentioned a little bit in the first half hour, but what do you see as the top applications that might get demand for hemp growing here? What is the most promise in your eyes?
Well, right now, I think that the two things have to come, a couple of things have to happen here. We've got to get those markets established. Right now, for growers coming into industrial hemp, there's all these, as Ethan's identifying, all these potential values and potential markets and potential that can come with this crop. It's definitely got good nutrient recycling capabilities and putting some of that fiber and plant material back into the ground for the nutrients it hangs on to. But right now, it's kind of a chicken and the egg thing. We're starting to grow it in Wisconsin this year for the first time in basically a generation. And those markets aren't there. They are not pre-established, so growers have to be very cautious in moving into industrial hemp to make sure they know what they're going to do with that product if they're looking to make a profit on it versus just kind of experimenting with growing it. They're looking for an alternative. Other commodity prices are low. Bringing hemp in as a mix in that commodity matrix for them is of strong interest and strong desire. But those markets are coming along and building with time. The ones we're seeing, I would say, in Wisconsin that I'm hearing the most about from interested growers and growers that we've licensed are the production of CBD oil, mm-hmm. kind of on the human health supplement arena and other things that CBD oil could go into, and organic grain production for human food consumption. We've got contract growers or companies that are contracting growers to produce grain for markets that they've already tapped into and have have access to and are looking to fill orders with Wisconsin growers this year.
Mm-hmm. So remind us, has there been a season? Have you had hemp grown there, or is this the first seeds under this pilot program in the ground now?
Yeah, for Wisconsin, again, this is it. This is our maiden voyage on industrial hemp. The legislation passed in December, signed into law. The legislature gave us 90 days for the Department of Agriculture to write state rules and create a program that people could start being licensed in 90 days later. We delivered on that and started issuing our first hemp licenses about 90 days after the governor signed it into law. We've got until July of 2020 to write our permanent rules, so we're learning a lot this season. We'll continue to learn, but we know we'll be making tweaks to our program, as all hemp states have done Certainly, we've been consulting with the states that have gone before us to try and make our rule somewhat consistent with other states so that this stuff can move interstate and can go to markets in other states. But we're all learning because it's a brand new deal.
Mm-hmm. Ethan, we mentioned the movement in the Iowa legislature. Now, it's not anything passed like they have in Wisconsin, but there was a research and exploration bill for hemp passed in the Iowa Senate unanimously this past legislative session, specifically for the coming session. Do you think it has enough steam to get the kind of project going that they have in Wisconsin?
Or regulations will kind of just oversee and supersede that, and it won't even be a conversation that we'll have to have for next year. But I hope that our leaders there in the House, you know, it made it through the Senate just fine, but the leadership in the House needs to understand that this is a real issue, and that when it comes time to reelect our leaders, that us voters, us young people, we're looking, and it's a decisive issue, and it's going to bring us out to the polls.
Okay. Ethan Voorhees, a farmer from Nashua, Iowa. Brian Kuhn from Wisconsin joining us, the Department of Agriculture there. We want to have a talk with Brent Young as well. Brent Young is an extension specialist at Colorado State University. Hello, Brent.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You've been listening to this conversation. What is your take, big picture, on the outlook for industrial hemp in this country? I assume since recreational, I guess I can't assume. They're two completely different things. Is industrial hemp being grown in Colorado as well?
Oh, absolutely. We've had a program since 2014. Our 2017 registered acres were over 12,000 acres. I've been told that we're probably somewhere north of 15,000 acres here in 2018. So we have been growing the crop for several years.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think of all this talk of hemp making a comeback? Is it real, or is it mostly hype?
You know, I think there's some potential across, certainly as the other two people have talked about this afternoon, about the versatility of the crop. I think there are some things to be said about it as a good crop in a rotation. I'm very skeptical about the fiber market. I think there's some real issues there. I think the grain or seed market has some potential. Again, it's going to be predicated on development of product and the program that Ethan had mentioned. He and I actually were on a committee working on the FDA approval of hemp for livestock and pet food. I think that has some potential if we can get through those hoops. I do think, however, probably the biggest market at this point, potential market, would be for the CBDs. I think Brian had mentioned those earlier. And what I'm seeing in terms of growth and opportunity are probably in that area. My biggest concern there is there's a lot of hand labor currently involved in the production of CBDs, and it's probably not suited at this point yet for large-scale commercial agriculture.
Mm-hmm. Do you, for the CBD oils, what part of the plant are you going to for that oil? What are you harvesting where?
That's really the flower. As with THC and marijuana, CBDs are produced in the hemp flower. They're actually produced by very small hair-like structures called trichomes. And so you really need to be able to harvest the intact flower. It has to be dried. I think typically it's dried in a dark area, and usually they're picked by hand. Most of the CBD production is taking place in greenhouses. We do have some outdoor production, but I think there's some real issues with the quality and quantity of the product where you're in a situation where you don't control the environment like you would in a greenhouse.
Mm-hmm. Well, clarify this, because we know they are from the same family, hemp and marijuana. When we talk about the growing demand for CBD oils, does hemp produce that oil better than marijuana? Or where are we deriving our CBD oils from now?
Yes, you're right. And actually, the CBD is unique to cannabis. It's only produced by the cannabis plant. So in marijuana, the flower produces high levels of THC. In hemp, the flower produces high levels of CBD. And so it's really kind of the one plant, again, marijuana, THC, hemp, CBD oils. The THC and CBDs are produced from the same plant structure, that being the flower of the plant.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a minute or so ago you had some real concerns of issues with the fiber market, whether the fiber market would grow for hemp. I have a hemp shirt. I meant to wear it today. I have it still in my closet, but I like it. It's quite durable. I don't know how it compares to cotton. Ethan earlier in the program says it exceeds cotton in many ways. Do you see it as a superior material?
You know, I really don't know, and I think it's up to the market to determine that. It may have some qualities that make it superior to cotton. Is this the fact that it's superior, does that relate then into the market price? Is it such a superior product that it will sell pound for pound higher than cotton? I don't know that. And part of the issue we have is no one really knows because, as been mentioned before, I think Brian did a nice job of this, explaining that there's just not that volume of product in the market yet. And so we really don't have an idea. Although we have, you know, upwards to 15,000 acres of of hemp in Colorado. If you were to press me and ask me, you know, what does a ton of hemp fiber or a pound of hemp seed cost, I couldn't tell you. I can tell you what cotton costs, and I can tell you what soybeans and corn costs, and I don't like any of them, especially the corn and soybeans, because we raise those here as well. But I don't know what hemp is worth. And so that whole function of just price discovery, which is a basic function, we don't have in hemp.
And that's because at this point it's just such a fringe commodity.
Exactly. We just don't have the volume. And I'm really concerned. I probably get 6 to 8 calls a month from people considering hemp. And one of the things I tell them right up front, I believe you need to produce it under a contract. And if you're going to do that here in Colorado, buyers must have a farm products and commodity handlers license, which also includes a surety bond, just so that we make sure that producers are getting paid for the products that they are growing.
Brent Young is with Colorado State University. He's an extension specialist. Let's go to our phones as we finish up this hour talking about industrial hemp and perhaps its comeback to Iowa and the Midwest and the rest of the country. Jerry is with us in Van Horn. Hi, Jerry. What's your question? Welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you. If you have the hemp plant, that one thing you want to do with it is return nutrients to the soil, and then you want to get the fiber, and then the seeds, and then the CBDs from the flowers. How do you harvest the plant industrially?
Brent, is that something in your neck of the woods of a specialty?
Yeah, I can tell a couple of things. First of all, there are cultivars that are currently designed more for fiber production, and they grow quite tall and produce a lot of biomass. Other cultivars that are primarily for the seed are a little bit shorter growing and are more adapted to harvesting with combine, for example. Again, I'm not aware of any mechanical way to harvest the flower because, again, as you can imagine, it's a very delicate part of the plant. You want to harvest it intact. So it's been what I understand is that's pretty much a hand harvesting process. So there's some real issues in harvesting. One of the problems we have in Colorado is our neighboring states allow the production of hemp. And so if we export hemp seed to Kansas or Nebraska or Wyoming, it's got to be non-viable. We have to heat treat it or chemically treat it so it can't be planted and produce hemp. And so there are some real issues with harvesting the crop.
Mm-hmm. We talked about the 2014 Farm Bill. There's a Farm Bill being discussed right now, the 2018 Farm Bill. Comment on that, Brian Kuhn, there in Wisconsin. Do you see a furtherance of laws under the Farm Bill, new structures for the coming Farm Bill in progress?
Yeah, there's been a debate and a lot of work done on the Farm Bill recently, and then the leadership in on both the House or on both sides of the Senate, Republican and Democratic, have come together on a bill that you know, specifically for related to hemp. And I'm not sure if, again, that's been on. There's been a lot of changing and rapidly evolving things going on that. So I'm not sure if it's still all tied into the farm bill or if this standalone legislation is still moving. But certainly there is. Desire on the farming, on the agricultural side, and the hemp industries side, for clarity and kind of consistency to be brought to this from a regulatory standpoint across the country. We still have conflicts. Again, I would say there's still conflict between the Controlled Substances Act and the Farm Bill provisions, and that's still keeping, I would say, quite a few people on the sidelines watching to see how this thing plays out over the next year or two, in the hopes that more clarity comes to that picture, so that they've got a higher level of comfort. As Brent was just identifying, some of that issue with moving stuff interstate and moving seed interstate. On the face of it, it appears that the Farm Bill allows for that, and yet the Drug Enforcement Agency is taking a different stance on it. And then Congress comes back in through the budget bill on an annual basis and says, but DEA can't use any federal money to enforce interstate movement issues on hemp. So it's all there's a lot of gray still there. And if that gray would clear and there would be more certainty to this. Again, there's the most certainty there's been to date currently, but it still has it's still not real clear, and there's still some ongoing conflicts that are, I think, keeping a lot of folks on the sidelines still.
Brent Young in Colorado at Colorado State University. Real quick here, we're coming to the end of the hour. We were talking earlier before you joined us about how these plants look nearly identical. How do you keep those sorted out there in Colorado? Both of those crops are legal in Colorado, and you don't want the pollen from one going to the other. How do you deal with it in Colorado?
Well, it is a contentious issue, and we have some counties that have legalized the growing of marijuana that have tried to outlaw the growing of hemp because of that issue. I think Ethan brings up a good point. It's probably more of an issue with the marijuana growers than hemp growers, and I'm not real sure that they have a real compelling argument there. However, on the hemp side, we do require the growers, as they register, to include the GPS coordinates of their farmland. And so if law enforcement has a concern about a hemp field maybe being a non-registered marijuana field, then they can go to the Department of Ag. They'll get the information about the coordinates and actually be able to determine if it's a registered hemp field.
Right. In the future, if not now, send in a drone, a little insect-sized drone or bug-sized drone to collect a sample, huh?
Could be.
Ethan Voorhees, let's start with you. We started with you at the beginning of the program. Forecast this out. You've got a lot of enthusiasm for hemp in Iowa. Where would you like to be in the next 5 or 10 years? Give us your rosiest vision.
I believe that we're capable of growing our brand. Other people are going to do this, and we encourage them to. But we just look to collaboration, and we believe that we can grow a brand around our high quality beef, and excel our customers the environmental benefits that go with it and the social. So we feel that there's tremendous upside to brands that go out and farm and have some kind of a conscience, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Ethan, before we go, you've probably awakened the interest in some farmers listening to this program. Where should people go to find out more about this and the possibility of raising it as a crop should the laws change here in Iowa?
I'm a director at the Iowa Hemp Association. I mean, you can always reach out to us at the Iowa Hemp Association, National Hemp Association, the Hemp Industry Association, social media. I mean, places like the Hemp Connoisseur magazine. There's all kinds of publications and information to be found, people to network with. The NOCO Hemp Expo out in Colorado in March, April. There's a lot of trade events popping up. So a lot of places a person can go to find information, and I'm always available to educate people whenever they reach out.
Okay, Ethan Voorhees, thank you for being with us this hour from Nashua, Iowa. Brian Kuhn, thank you for joining us from Wisconsin. Brent Young, joining us from Colorado at Colorado State University. Brent, Brian, and Ethan, thank you so much for a wonderful hour raising our awareness about a possible comeback of hemp in our state, in our country. Thanks, gentlemen.
You're welcome.
River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon and Emily Woodbury. Help today from Lucy McGeehee as well. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Tomorrow on the program, we're going to listen back to a program, a discussion from last year on the poor state of our infrastructure here in Iowa and what's being done about it. What to do about our crumbling infrastructure. Tomorrow on the program, I'm Ben Kiefer. It's River to River. Thank you for joining us.